The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Well, welcome to this episode of the Retirement and IRA Show. This is the EDU edition for education, where we dig a little deeper into one particular topic, as opposed to our Q&A shows, where we answer your plethora of questions on various topics. Today, we're going to dig into one particular topic in a little more detail, try to cover it more comprehensively. And that topic are making one-time transfers of money from your traditional IRA into a health savings account, or HSA. We'll expand on the possibilities for doing so, what the rules are, and what are some things to watch out for if you're going to try to attempt such a thing to fund your HSA. You might wonder why you would want to do such a thing. Well, the HSA has some beneficial rules pertaining to qualified medical expenses that an IRA doesn't. So it's a way to improve your tax situation by having an HSA if you're qualified to have such a thing. And this is a method for filling up that HSA with pre-tax money that could possibly come out tax-free if used for qualified medical expenses. So welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me. Well, now thanks for joining me. Now let's turn your microphone on.
Microphone is on. Mm-hmm. We just finished recording the Q&A show. That's going to be playing the end of this week. And this EDU show is going to be playing the following week. And I had one hell of a coughing fit on that show, and my throat's still a little sore. But I think
he tried to breathe. He tried to breathe his coffee.
I tried to inhale coffee. It does not work.
No, it's If you would have asked ahead of time, I would have told you that was a bad idea.
Yeah, I just thought, gee, this coffee tastes good. I wonder what it would be like if I snorted it. And oh my!
Well, Lord. I'm glad you survived.
I did, but it was not pretty. Okay, so today we are going to talk about funding your health savings accounts with money in your IRA. We get these questions several times a year. I run into this constantly with people who are doing retirement analyses for, and I just thought this might be a good Q&A topic. Talk about...
EDU topic.
What did I say?
Q&A.
Oh.
It is a Q, but we're going to do a long, drawn-out A.
It's not going to be that long. I think I can have this wrapped up in 10 minutes.
Perfect. That's the perfect goal.
You believe that?
No.
I don't think it'll take the full hour, though. But...
I hope not, because I'll be gone. You'll be finishing this up by yourself.
The technical acronym for these qualified funding distributions are QHFDs. That does not roll off the tongue.
No, no. There's
it's not like QLAC.
The Department of Acronyms at the government has clearly suffered from some of the funding shortages of the current administration.
Well, the government is closed down.
Yeah, but this whole year, this past year or so, the acronyms coming out have been terrible.
And somehow you're blaming the Trump administration?
Yeah, because it's the people working for the administration that come up with these things. A CUFDA. This is a terrible. QLAC, that rolls off the tongue.
Well, QH...
IRMA. Rolls off the tongue.
QHFD.
Islet.
That don't roll. That doesn't roll at all.
It's like a
horrendous.
It's like an utterance from coughing.
Right. True. And the H stands for quite a bit. So QHFD stands for Qualified Health Savings Account Funding Distribution.
Mm. Yeah.
It's a mouthful.
It's an accurate. In this case, it would be an initialism anyway, since we're not going to pronounce it, not an acronym, but most people call them acronyms anyway. But yeah, this it's accurate. The QHFD, I get that, but it's not easily pronounceable.
No, but in short, folks, what that is taking money from your IRA, which is subject to taxes, and getting it to an HSA, a health savings account, assuming you qualify for one and have one. And we're going to make that assumption on this show. We're not going to jump into what an HSA is, how you can get one, how do you fund it, where do you open it. Maybe we'll do another EDU show on that. We're just going to assume those listening have an HSA or understand HSAs enough where we don't have to cover those basics. Instead, we're going to cover one unique strategy, and that is, how do you fund an HSA with money inside an IRA? Because that's what everyone would want to do, Chris, if they could. Is there a way, kind of like Monty Python, A Search of the Holy Grail, can you find a way to get money out of an IRA, which is a pool of money that we call always taxable, and move it into a pool of money that we call never taxable, which for most people are Roth IRA distributions, loans from cash value life insurance, and distributions, qualified distributions from an HSA account. These are never taxable accounts. How can I get, they say to us all the time, Chris, how can I get money from my IRA, which is always going to be subject to taxes, how can I get that into something that will never be subject to taxes without me having to pay taxes?
Essentially, how can I avoid taxes on this?
Yeah, how can I have my cake and eat it too?
Yeah, and you can do it a little bit if you do it right.
Very tiny cake piece you can have here.
I don't know, tiny. It's not tiny.
Well, it's not huge.
No, it's not huge. I'm not sure why you pronounced it like that, but
no idea. But how does the concept of this QHFD work? Well, in short, the government will let you take one time and one time only, and this is probably the biggest mistake people make. They think they can do this repeatedly. It's not. It's one time and one time only. They let you take money from an IRA and move it to an HSA. It cannot be done as a 60-day rollover. So we spent the Q&A show, if you remember, Chris, that we just recorded maybe a half hour ago. We spent a lot of time talking about being able to do a Roth conversion as a 60-day rollover. Well, you cannot do a funding from your IRA to an HSA as a 60-day rollover. In other words, Chris, you can't take money out of your IRA and physically move it into your HSA. It has to be done, must be done, as a trustee-to-trustee transfer. So that's one of the things that I want to point out. And you can only do one once during your life. So you can't do it every year. That's something that people think they can do all the time. And they're going to slowly whittle down that always taxable IRA and get it into a never taxable HSA if the distribution is a qualified distribution. That's not how it works. It's once per year, has to be done as a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer. And it is not in addition to what you are allowed to put in as a contribution. It's in lieu of a contribution. So if you're allowed to put $6,500 into your HSA, if you're a single person, and you can put $6,500 in, you can't put $6,500 into an HSA as a contribution and then transfer $6,500 from your IRA into an HSA as a QHFD. You're not going to be allowed to do that. The transfer from the IRA is it's in lieu of making a contribution. So if you are allowed to do $6,500 and you put $3,000 in directly from your bank account as a contribution, you would be able to do another $3,500 in 1 year because it's a once per lifetime. So you want to do it all at once. You don't want to say, oh, I'll put half in this year, half in next year. Can't do it. So does that part make sense, the gotcha so
far? Yeah,
so
somebody should consider if they're trying to do some of each, maybe putting that money of their own aside to make a bigger contribution on their own next year, but fully fund the HSA using the QHFD this year. So make sure you think of those things when you're – the sad thing is if you did it half and half, you can't do half and half again next year because you'll have used your once per lifetime transaction. So,
and this is a tax and penalty free transfer. So if you are under the age of 59 and a half, there is no 10% penalty imposed. This is important because essentially it's a wash if you really stop and think about it. If you were over the age of 59 and a half, but under 65, so you haven't enrolled in Medicare yet, so it's a small window. Because once you enroll in Medicare, longtime listeners will know, because we've told them repeatedly, you can no longer contribute to an HSA account. But if you are over the age of 59 and a half, you have no 10% early withdrawal penalty. You could take $6,500 out of your IRA during that time period. You could take $6,500 out of your IRA as a distribution, no 10% penalty because you're over 59 and a half. And then direct that $6,500 or any other $6,500 you have into a HSA.
And
you'll get a 100% deduction for that. So it's almost a wash, except for people under the age of 59 and a half. If you had no money to fund an HSA and you wanted to and you were under 59 and a half and you decided, well, I'm going to do this by taking money from my IRA, it's a wash because you take money from the IRA, you have to pay taxes on it, but then you put it into an HSA, you get to deduct it. So the QHFD, which rolls right off my tongue, is kind of a wash. It is a funding mechanism designed, I think, more importantly, Chris, for people under the age of 59 and a half who don't have money to fund an HSA, but have money in an IRA. And if they took the money out of the IRA because they're under 59 and a half, even though they would have a wash on the taxation, they would still owe $650 penalty tax for taking money out of the, I'm using $6,500 as my example, they would have to pay taxes, a penalty on that $6,500.
So you could avoid that by making the direct transfer via the QHFD from the IRA to the HSA.
One time only.
So a lot of people use it to kind of get the ball rolling, kind of start the HSA off with some money before they've had time to be kind of funding it over time. So that's where I've usually seen it. People wanted to kind of get it started with an immediate $6,500 injection.
Or in my case this year, I'm thinking of doing one so I can max out my Roth contribution. If you remember for the last few years, I made an election to pump more money into the business, so I didn't want to pay myself too much. And I underfunded my Roth for the last 2 years. But this year I'm thinking maybe I'll do a QHFD to fund my HSA this year, and I can direct the rest into my Roth. So that's just an example because I'm under the age of 59 and a half. I would have to do it as a QHFD. Capiche?
Got it. Capiche.
Okay. All right. So that's a little bit about QHFDs. How does the process work? Well, it has to be a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer. So you're going to have to use paperwork. Do not do it as a 60-day rollover. Do not take money out of your IRA, put it in your bank account, and then write a check to your HSA. That will not work. The money that came out of your IRA will be considered a distribution. So when you move money, you generally will have to use the paperwork of either the receiving custodian, in this case, the HSA. So I would begin by contacting your HSA and asking them, what is their process for completing the QHFD? What do you guys prefer we do? Chances are they will definitely have paperwork for you to complete. They'll probably send the paperwork in to the HSA custodian, and the HSA custodian will transfer and send the money directly to, the IRA custodian will send it directly to the HSA custodian. That is most likely going to be how it will work, but all custodians are different, and they may have their own set of rules, so you may want to contact them first on your own. Does that part make sense, Chris?
Totally.
Perfect. One unique thing, QHFDs, which again rolls right off your tongue, are available for inherited IRAs.
Hadn't considered that, but that's good.
Yep. Inherited IRAs can be used for a QHFD. So if you inherited an IRA and you have an HSA, you may want to consider doing that. QHFDs also can be applied to your required minimum distribution. So that's a unique case that no one will ever use. Because, I can't say no one, but few people will ever be able to benefit. Because people who have RMDs are how old, Chris?
70 and a half.
And how old when you go on Medicare?
65.
And can someone on Medicare put money into an HSA?
Negative.
So it defeats the whole purpose there.
Except for inherited IRAs.
Inherited IRAs.
Yep.
That's why I led in with it applies to inherited IRAs. So if you have an inherited IRA, you're being forced to take money out of it because you have RMDs if you're a non-spousal beneficiary. You might as well direct that.
So 1 year you could put it in.
Yes.
Yeah.
But remember, it can't be done as a 60-day rollover. So you can't take your required minimum distribution, receive it, put it in the bank, and then deposit it in. So you would have to transfer the money before the RMD comes out, trustee to trustee, and then inform your custodian not to send you an RMD this year or reduce the RMD by the amount of the QHFD. Does that part make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Once they send you the RMD, that's like toothpaste leaving the tooth, a paste, meaning the
tube.
Tube, not the tooth.
It's all good.
I was doing so good today.
It's all good.
But what I was going to say. Oh, so the toothpaste comes out of the tube in the sense the RMD comes out of the inherited IRA first, folks. Then there's no squeezing that RMD back into the IRA to transfer it as a QHFD. You missed it for that year. So you would need to make sure your custodian of the inherited IRA is on board with what you're doing, understands that they are to reduce the amount of your required minimum distribution by the amount of your QHFD, and make sure they're on board with you as you do this strategy. But if you are a young ITunian listening to this and you inherited an IRA from your parents or grandparents and you have an HSA, you may be able to get some of the required distribution into the HSA.
Perfect.
Capiche?
Yes.
Any questions on anything I've reviewed with you so far?
No, not all. I agree with all of it so far.
Here's another unique little did you know. A QHFD is one of the few exemptions to cream in the coffee.
Oh. Hadn't really considered that one.
Yep.
So that is a little known fact. It's an unknown fact until now by me.
Why don't you... I know you know what we mean by cream in the coffee. Why don't you explain to people? Because there's only a handful. There's only like three now, maybe four exemptions to the pro rata rule, which we call cream in the coffee.
Right. So in your traditional IRA, it is possible to have pre-tax and post-tax monies mixed in there. The post-tax money being referred to as basis in the IRA lingo and tax lingo. But normally, if you've got, just to throw out some even numbers, $100,000 in a traditional IRA, $50,000 of it you've already paid taxes on, $50,000 you have not. As you take money out of the IRA, with very few exceptions, the money must come out on a pro rata basis, half and half. So if you take $3,000 out, $1,500 is considered to be taxable because it hasn't been taxed yet, and the other $1,500 comes out tax-free since taxes had already been paid on it. You can't specify. You can't say, I want all $3,000 of just coffee or all $3,000 just of cream. It's mixed together in there. But with a few exceptions, the one we're going to focus on here is moving money through a QHFD to the HSA, health savings account. It can only accept pre-tax money. So the $3,000 in my example that you moved over would be all pre-tax money. It's forcing just coffee to come out instead of coffee and cream to come out. It's one of the few, like Jim said, one of the few exceptions to the pro rata rule. And I, until this point, and I don't have an HSA, have not participated in one personally, don't deal with them on a regular basis. So this is one little tidbit that I find very interesting on this show. I didn't know that.
Now you know.
Yeah.
Another thing to consider, a lot of times people do this to clean up small IRAs. I know the IRA I'm thinking of moving in there, Chris, only has about $2,600 in it. It's not a huge amount inside my IRA. I'm doing it as a way to clean up that IRA to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
However, what if you were allowed to put, say, $6,500 into your HSA, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you have one IRA with $4,000 in it and one IRA with $4,000 in it. So you got two IRAs with $8,000.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to put $6,500 in. But if you took $4,000 from one IRA and transferred it in trustee to trustee, you are not allowed to take $2,500 from the other IRA.
Because now you've done two of them.
Now you've done two.
Mm-hmm.
It's one per year. One per lifetime. Not one per IRA. So you have to first combine those two IRAs into one. So you would have to take two $4,000 IRAs, make it one $8,000 IRA, and then do a $6,500 QHFD from that in order to make it work. So if you're dealing with small IRAs and you're thinking, well, I got this tiny IRA over there. It's not the full amount that I can contribute, but I want to just get rid of it. I'll make up the rest. Take that IRA instead and move it to your bigger IRA and then do one and you can get the full amount. Just a little strategy there, a little trick to hopefully save some people some money on that. I thought that's a good little thing to know. Another thing to keep in mind with these, there is no 10% early withdrawal penalty or taxation owed on this unless you lose your HSA eligibility anytime throughout the year. You have to remain HSA eligible for the whole year you do it. So if something happens and you lose your, most people are no longer eligible for an HSA for one of two things. They reach 65 and enroll in Medicare, or they no longer have a high deductible policy and therefore they don't qualify for an HSA. If you did a qualified HSA funding distribution and then before the end of that calendar year, it's calendar year on this, not 365-day period, but calendar year, if you then are no longer eligible during that tax filing calendar year, then the tax-free movement and 10% penalty goes away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, even if it became taxable, assuming you're over the age of 59 and a half, it's a wash.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're under 59 and a half, the 10% penalty could come in.
Right.
And
so that could happen to somebody who worked with an employer that had an HSA and a high deductible health care plan, which go hand in hand, and then moved to a new employer that didn't do that, didn't offer that. They had a more traditional medical insurance or health insurance plan and you lost your HSA eligibility. Mm-hmm. So that could happen to a number of people.
And there is one exemption, another obscure little thing that you can learn on this show, one exemption to the one per lifetime rule. Do you know what that is?
You are resurrected.
I had to look at you twice. I'm thinking, what?
Okay, there's an exemption to the one per lifetime rule. I don't know. What is the one exemption?
If you began the year and you did I hate this acronym.
QHFD.
Yeah. God, we got to come up with something.
I wrote it down so I could just read it every time I needed to.
It's too many consonants.
Yeah. And consonants, too.
That's what I said.
Well, kind of.
Whatever. If you start the year or the month that you do the QHFD, is a better way of putting it, and you were eligible as a single plan participant, but during the course of the year...
What? I get where you're going here.
...become eligible for a family plan, uh-huh, you are allowed to do another QHFD to top off the difference between the single and family plan.
Well, that is an exception that someone built in specifically for someone who's transitioning from single to family. Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's a good one. That's a good one to keep in your back pocket just in case.
Pull these little what-ifs right out. But that's just a little minor what-if. But keep that in mind, that if you did one as a single person and then get... Or you could already be married but have just a single plan, not a marital plan, and then add a marital plan. You can do another QHFD in that year to equal out.
Okay.
Okay. Just figured I would put that little bit. Okay. I think the final thing I already talked about, though I want to make sure I'm looking at my notes, as you can probably tell. Okay. Okay, here's one thing that I did not specify clearly, and I want to make sure I set the record straight on it. You have to remain eligible, I said, for 1 year. Remember, throughout that year. But it's a one-year period, Chris. It's not a calendar year. It's a 365-day period. So we all go back to how is the IRS and the government counting these certain rules? Is it calendar year or is it 365 days? So if you did a QHFD November of 2018, say, I'm just picking that randomly, you must remain HSA eligible all the way through November 30th of 2019. You have to go through that 12th month. So it's not just saying I'm going to do one. Let's say you did a QHFD November of 2019. And you remained HSA eligible all the way to January of 2020. And you think, I made it. It is now 2020. No, you did not. And that QHFD is now taxable and subject to the 10% early withdrawal penalty if you're under 59 and a half. You must make it 12 months and to the end of the 12th month. So if you did the QHFD November 1st, 2019, you have to make it to November 30th, 2020. That's another gotcha. You look confused.
Oh, I got it.
Okay. How come you have that look on your face?
I was just counting in my head.
Oh. 12 months? November to November is 12 months.
Well, October 31st is 12 months from November 1st.
Oh.
But if you did it late in the month, then you got a problem.
Why do you have a problem?
Because of the counting of the months.
You lost me on that one. You can expand.
Well, you said, depending on when during the month you put it in, that month doesn't count or does count?
It begins on the first day of the month. You put it in, and it has to go to the last day of the month the following year.
Oh, so that's 13 months, not 12.
It has to go. The way I've always remembered it, it has to go to the end, the same month, but the 30th or the 31st day, depends on if the month has 30 or 31 mm-hmm. days, of the following year. Has to make it all the way to that. And Ed specifically gave that to us as a reference point, and he used November 1st, I forget what year, but he said if you use November 1st, again, of 2018, you would have to go to November 30th, 2019. You have to stay eligible for the HSA during that time period. So he warned us on that when clients are turning 65.
Oh, yeah, when they're approaching 65.
Because as soon as you hit 65, you are no longer HSA eligible if you enroll in Medicare. And most people at 65 will, or if you're claiming Social Security, you're automatically enrolled.
Yeah, that's the other gotcha. Even though you might say, well, I'm not doing Medicare Part B, which is the one everybody always talks about. The moment you enroll in Social Security at 65, you are automatically enrolled in Medicare Part A, and you can't turn it down. You can't say, no, 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 I don't want that because I want my HSA to still work for contributions, and that's not how it works. So that's a little gotcha we've talked about previously on other shows about accidentally shutting off your eligibility for HSAs by claiming Social Security. Even if you turn down, maybe you're still working, and you don't need the Medicare Part B, so you elect not to sign up for Medicare Part B. You still are enrolled in Medicare Part A only. So that's a little unfortunate side effect of claiming Social Security whilst trying to also put money into an HSA.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they clear up.
Hopefully they'll clean that one up, because that's...
Yeah, it's the HSAs growing so much in popularity. Politicians on the Republican side are very favorable towards HSAs and want to liberalize them. And politicians on the Democratic side, for some reason or another, I'm not sure why, are not as open and receptive to HSAs and either want to see them go away or keep the rules as restrictive and complex as they currently are. I'm hoping they do make HSAs far less complicated than they need to be. But even this qualified HSA funding distribution, which sounds so simple on its face value, can have these little gotchas. And to me, the big gotcha is you have to remain HSA eligible to the same month in the following year to the last day of that month. And I think that's where a lot of people could be snagged, because they think, when I did it, I was eligible for the HSA, so it should count. And you shouldn't penalize me for something that might happen 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 months later. But they do. And again, it's not so much the taxation if they disallow it, because they might say to you, well, that money from your IRA, you have to declare it as income now. It's not so much that issue, because if you had to declare that as income, you still get a deduction for it when it goes into the HSA. So it's a wash from that standpoint. But it's the 10% early withdrawal penalty if you're under 59 and a half. That is what's going to get you. Does that part make sense?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's all I had on these qualified health savings account funding distributions, otherwise known as QHD. It's a lousy acronym, QHFD. I don't even know how you would pronounce that, but it is what it is. I think that's the hottest thing on this today's show, was trying to remember how to pronounce, or at least the letters, QHFD. I'm trying to do it solely from memory. It's a tough one. You got to be looking at that.
That's why I wrote it down.
And I would still get it wrong if it was me. I'd look right at it and...
Call it Barney.
QHFD would not be Barney.
Well, I don't know. Random names come out a lot around here, so.
Barney. No. Okay, any questions you have on that?
No. I learned a couple new things on HSAs. That's
good.
So for me, this is a great show.
I will be attending or going to. There is a new designation. I don't care about the designation. In fact, I don't even think you get a designation. There is a new course, group of courses that you can now take on HSAs. Hmm. I got it saved right here on my iPad.
Nice.
And I was thinking that I would do that. I don't know when, because you know us in the office, we're busier than heck. But I thought, here is a need that someone saw and is really stepping into it, because HSAs are incredibly complex, far more complex than most people think. And I'm trying to find the name of that, and of course I cannot find it. Oh, well, I'll tell people when I'm ready to take the course what the course is. And
so they can take it with you?
No, they don't have to take it with me, but just so they know. I intend, we get a lot of questions on HSAs, and I don't answer all of them. I wait for the Ed Slot group to help me out with them, because HSAs are incredibly, incredibly complex. And I don't feel, my knowledge, albeit is greater than a lot of people, it is not nearly to the level of what it needs to be. Does that part make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So hopefully people learned something on this. If you can think of any type of question that you would like us to address, send it to us on a Q&A, excuse me, not a Q&A show, an EDU show. This is where we want to take one topic, like I did today, drill down, teach you the basics about it, maybe tell you a little bit about the one-offs and the unique things and unique aspects to it, and help you learn and understand these topics in a little more depth on what we call the EDU for education show. I did find that, by the way. It will be the health savings account certificate, and it is offered. Yeah, health savings account expert certificate. I can see compliance will have an issue with the word expert, but health savings account certificate, and it is a course structure that I will go away to. I'm trying to see what city it's in, but it's not telling me here. But it looks pretty involved.
Well, good. And so we'll learn some new things from that when you do that, and share them either on the EDU show, or maybe we'll tackle a few more of the questions we get on the Q&A show.
Ah, it's Washington, D.C.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. That's when I saw that. It's like, who the hell wants to go to Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, not me. But, well, actually, it's not too much further from home, so I could probably fly out to Washington and then shoot up the coast and say hi to family.
Perfect.
Okay, but anyways, anybody want anything else answered, just send us an email, and we will hopefully get to it on the EDU show, or we will just keep coming up with topics like this. And again, as we say on our Q&A show, Chris and I are living, breathing, practicing financial planners here in the state of Colorado. Even though we're in Colorado, we work with people throughout the United States. Retirement planning is all we do. Distribution planning is not the same as accumulation planning. If you use accumulation planning rules for a distribution portfolio, you're going to set yourself up for failure. You have to understand distribution rules, and that's what our firm specializes in. We know retirement planning inside and out. It is not a bullet point on our website. It is all we do. And we understand everything from the income needs to the medical needs to the taxation needs to the Social Security and even some Medicare needs that our clients run into. So if you have any questions about your own retirement, or if you're looking for someone to give you an honest second opinion, what makes our firm unique is you don't have to move any money to us. You don't have to have us manage your investments and just skim off the top and charge you 1.25%, 1.5%. What you simply want is impartial advice, impartial information, people to look at your situation and evaluate it for you. If that's what you're looking for, then you may want to talk to us to see if we'd be a good fit. And the easiest way to do that, schedule what we call a coffee and a second opinion phone call. What you simply do is go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. In the upper left, or kind of like in the middle left now, of the website is a schedule appointment with us, a schedule call with us calendar. I forget what it's called, but it's fairly intuitive and self-explanatory. You click the little calendar, and you can schedule your own coffee and a second opinion phone call for us to chat with you and see if there is a way that we may be able to work with you and assist you. If we think there is, we'll explain it to you. If we don't think that there's a way that we can work with you, we hopefully will be able to explain why and point you in the direction of someone who can help you.
Perfect. So we really appreciate people listening, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.